Good morning, everybody. And thank you very much for these two great papers. I don't know if I really can add something to that, especially because I won't talk about Turkey anyway. I mean, and actually, I'm an expert, I'm also an historian. I'm an expert in European-African relations, and it was not my idea to speak here, but it was Bilgin who urged me to ask this question, actually, how African is Europe? And yeah, then I said yes, and I mean, it's really nice. I started wondering about these questions, and my starting point was to think about current images of Africa and Europe, and I mean, first of all, we have this clear, the question is that things are really clear. We have this clear geographical border with the Mediterranean on the one side. On the other side, we have this image, or there is a very strong image within the public about Africa as the forgotten continent, about Africa as economically weak, as culturally chained by backward traditions, and so on. And on the opposite, we have Europe as a very strong economic power, very influential in politics, in world politics, and last not least, the ideal of a modern and progressive society. So the question is really, isn't this a very stupid question to ask how African is Europe? And then you look at the history and things are really different. It's different because you really can trace some, and that's my purpose here, you can trace some different visions of Europe and Africa in the past. So this, I think, historical account is important for two reasons, because on the one side, currently, if you look, have a closer look on it, Africa currently regains some kind of geopolitical but also economic interest in Europe. I mentioned two examples in the paper. And on the other side, and there I'm very close to you, Daniel, I think this historical account allows us to reflect the time-dependent meaning of Europe. So, let me start with some visions of Eurafrica since the interwar years. The idea of Eurafrica came up in the second half of the 19th century. And I mean, sometimes French writer Victor Hugo is cited as the inventor of this term, but actually didn't use it. So it's not clear how this term came up. And I mean, it's not so important where it really originated, because some claim it originated in France, others claim it originated in Germany. Actually, it was understood as a vision connecting both continents in economic, political, and cultural respects. And this idea or concept of Eurafrica really gained some influence only after the First World War with Count Richard Cuden Overcalergi, who you know perhaps. He was the founder of this Pan-European Union, and he divided the world in five areas of power. And one of this area was Pan-Europe, which comprised Europe, continental Europe, and the colonial territories of the European colonial powers. So it comprised Europe and Africa, and excluded, and that's important to my mind, it excluded Great Britain. So we had a really different, and I mean, this Pan-European Union was really an influential influential social movement in this time, because people like Thomas Mann, Aristide Briand, Albert Einstein, Konrad Adenauer, Enzo, and many others were members of this union. So we had really a different vision of how to conceptualize European integration. And even after the war, this kind of attempt to integrate Europe via the detour of Africa continued. So, because the idea was to reconcile Europe via a European cooperation in Africa. This is reflected in the Schuman Plan, as well as in the Strasbourg Plan, and especially in the Schuman Plan. I mean, it's really, I have to cite this, I think, because it's so, I like this citation so much, because Adenauer, when he heard about it, he said, about this African dimension of the Schuman plan, he said that by including Africa, the plan also gains an extraordinary economic significance for overpopulated Western Europe. So it was really, there was a different vision, yeah, at that time. Okay, actually these plans didn't work out. Schuman plan didn't work out. The African dimension was deleted from the Schuman plan as well as from the Strasbourg plan. And the reason was that that France was against this kind of European endeavor in Africa, because France wanted to build up their own France-Afrique, not Eurafrique, mais France-Afrique. And that's why they refused this common European adventure in Africa. And that's a very important point, because the, wait a moment, yeah, they established their French Union, encompassing France, metropolitan France, and their its African territories. And they really built up in this French Union a French-African common market, very protectionist. They started to let African elites participating in the political process in France, in French politics, and so on. So we had some Africans sitting in the National Assembly in Paris, and that's why France-Afrique was not so what was not compatible with Eurafrica and Eurafrican visions. So then it's a little bit surprising why this association of the overseas countries and territories to the EEC came up. And the reason for France reversal in this question, because it was really a France conditio sine qua non for conclusion of the EEC treaty. These reasons were at least twofold. On the one hand, France get very hard financial problems due to Algerian war and so on. And on the other side, they wanted to maintain their French Union. So what they wanted was a European burden sharing in order to maintain this French-African ensemble. So Eurafrica then was used in order to harmonize two French zones of influence. And in the end, Netherlands and Germany gave in. And this association of the overseas countries and territory as part of the EEC treaty came into being. So let me now tell you something about the debates on Eurafrica and the early European integration in Paris. for Paris, I already mentioned more or less, Eurafrica was really a France-Afrique sponsored by the EEC. So their vision was that nobody from the other member states had to interfere in internal French-African affairs. And I made some examples in the paper. I think I can let this away now. For Brussels, and there arose a conflict, some kind of conflict, because for the EEC and especially for the Commission, they had a different understanding of this Eurafrica, because they saw themselves as the head of this kind of Eurafrican ensemble. And then conflicts arose between France and French government and the DG8, which was competent for this association and this African affairs. And so we have here different visions of Eurafrica. On the other side, they really tried to imitate the model of the French Union, which is reflected by the attempt to integrate African civil service in the workaday life in Brussels. And they really, some Africans in 1959, 1960s, really went on regular positions. So we have here a clear sign of a lift Eurafrican organization. I mean, it's a very small argument, but I mean, it's a very small accident. After decolonization, these Africans were immediately sent back. but anyways, I mean, we have to think about, because at least for this small moment, the EEC was really an Eurafrican organization to a certain extent, I would argue. So, concerning African perspectives, Eurafrica emerged, especially after decolonization, as an anti-colonial extension of the French Union. So the French Union really gave the African territories some financial and economic advantages. And after independence, the EEC had proved that They were not the continuation of colonial power and so on. And that's why they really rested their hopes, the Africans rested their hopes on the extension of the advantages of the French Union toward Europe. But at the same time, I mean, decolonization triggered also a decline of European visions because, especially for Germany, for the Netherlands and so on, Africa, they recognize that Africa is not so interesting for them in economical terms. And that's why the first Yaoundé Convention concluded in 1963 between the Associated African States and the EEC was rather a sign of alienation from each other, because the African states lost their privileged they lost their subsidies given beforehand by the French government as regards some agricultural crops and so on. And the reasons for that is that that Germany and the Netherlands both rejected any new obligation as regards this Euro-African vision. So, I mean, how to conclude? I don't know. I only wanted to show you that Africa really was seen for a long time as a natural partner, and partly also as a part of Europe and of early visions of European integration. And again, I'm very close to Daniel. I think that it's really, I wanted to show you, to demonstrate you the historical contingency of the meaning of Europe. And I also had a good, I also conclude with a good message and a bad message in my paper. And I think the good message is, I know. And I think we, also at this point, we are very close, because the good message is this, that we have this notion, that we have this historical change, but the bad one is that it is Europe who defined it. Thank you very much. Thanks.